Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So let's talk about a drug that many people use every day. This particular drug in its pure form is a white powder that gives people energy and focus. A 1/16 of a teaspoon is all you need to get that effect, but a full tablespoon will kill you. The drug is also highly addictive. So what is it?
You might have guessed cocaine, but in fact, we're thinking of another drug that is virtually unregulated and that most of us take every day. So here are some big hints. It's in our coffee and our tea. It's also in Coke, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper, Snapple, and all of those energy drinks, not to mention orange soda and chocolate.
And you've now, by now, no doubt figured it out. We're talking about caffeine. Millions of us depend on it, need it. Let's face it, we're addicted. I know I am. But it's a drug that Murray Carpenter says we know surprisingly little about. He has degrees in psychology and environmental studies. He's also a writer who lives in Belfast, Maine. His new book is called Caffeinated: How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. And he's here with us now. And Murray Carpenter, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a fascinating read. And I want to invite our listeners into this conversation. Listeners, are you a caffeine addict? Tell us about your daily habit: coffee, tea, energy drinks. Why do you drink? Why do you consume? Have you tried to stop? What questions do you have about your daily caffeine fix? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and Radio Boston. I want to just start with this detail that we mentioned in the introduction because I found it early in your book. That is the strength of pure caffeine, that you only need just a little bit to get that effect, but a full tablespoon, lethal.
Yep, it's in its pure concentrated form. We think of caffeine as a mild stimulant because we take it in such really tiny doses in sodas or coffee. But yeah, in its pure concentrated form, it's quite powerful.
Yeah, and you've just surprised me. You've just brought in a package of full of pure caffeine white powder. From a distance, it could be cocaine, but I trust you that it isn't.
No, that's right. This is 100-gram powder of caffeine. I bought it off the internet for about $12. So this is 10 lethal doses right here.
Good Lord.
Yeah,
so what would one do with a package of pure caffeine like this?
It's a great question. I believe it's mostly sold to bodybuilders and things who blend it into their protein/workout smoothies, and which is of course another area in which caffeine is widely used, is for to enhance athletic performance.
Interesting. Well, I want to talk about that, but let me sort of go back to the beginning. What got you thinking about devoting this research and this really interesting book on the question of caffeine, and caffeine as a drug specifically?
Well, as an undergraduate many years ago, in at the University of Colorado, I was a psychology major. And I did a paper for a senior seminar on caffeine and cognition because I was a latecomer to coffee drinking. I really noticed how it seemed to help me to study and to focus for writing and all that. I was also racing bikes at the time. My teammates and I knew if you had a strong cup of coffee before a race, we weren't scientific about it, but it seemed to give you a boost. Mm. So I thought I knew a little bit more than the layperson about it. And then when the controversy over energy drinks really started to bubble up, I thought I should look into it more and really try to cover caffeine as a beat. And when I did, I realized I really didn't know much about caffeine at all.
Right. And what you know, and why is that? I mean, it begins at so many levels. I mean, you make the point that the Food and Drug Administration apparently doesn't know that much about caffeine, or at least they're not so inclined to think of it really as a drug that needs to be regulated, right?
Yeah, and we have to give FDA credit for this because there's really no parallel like this in terms of a drug that FDA would be regulating that you and I and most Americans are taking every single day. But yeah, it's fascinating. For example, there's not even a requirement that people who are bottlers who are blending caffeine into sodas and energy drinks list the quantity that they're blending into. And that's sort of the basic thing we need to know to be informed consumers.
Mm. So how would that work? I mean, would it be listed in grams, teaspoons, and would the average consumer even know how to read that?
Okay, great question. And Coke, Pepsi, and Dr. Pepper Snapple have started voluntarily doing this. Mm-hmm. And it is listed in milligrams. and it's small and it's on the back, and most of us would have a hard time because, you know, what's 35 milligrams of caffeine? It's hard for us to comprehend this. But some of the energy drink bottlers are starting to do this as well. So there is some movement afoot, and as FDA is assessing now the safety of energy drinks, I think labeling is going to be one of the big issues they take on.
Yeah, and why have they been so slow to do it? Because the FDA is all over the regulation of other things we ingest and put in our body. Why have they been sort of slow to get around to caffeine?
Well, this is one of the things that really fascinated me when I researched the book. FDA, the predecessor to the FDA, the Bureau of Chemistry, first went after Coca-Cola over the issue of the caffeine it was adding to their drinks in 1909. Hmm. And this was a legal case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And at that time, they were already asking the same questions we're asking today. Is it safe for children? Is it addictive? Is it different when it's added to a cola than when it's consumed in coffee? And what role should the federal government play in regulating it? And these questions linger today. And I think the fact that so many of us drink coffee every day does sort of stop the conversation. If there's less caffeine, say, in energy drinks than there is in coffee, and you're not regulating coffee, you know, how then should you regulate energy drinks? So it is a complex question.
Yeah. And, I want to get to this question that I'm sure a lot of listeners would love to hear your take on, because my guess is a lot of listeners are like me, like you mentioned to me before we went on the air that you drink coffee. Your book has the subheading, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. So what's the verdict? I mean, are people who are hooked on coffee okay? Is it something we should unhook ourselves from? What's your view?
Well, the simple answer is, if you don't experience anxiety, you're sleeping fine, you're happy and healthy, and you're a moderate caffeine user, which would be 3 to 4, often considered 3 to 4 cups of coffee a day, not monster cups, but...
Right.
Then there's no research that suggests you really need to cut back.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people who sleep badly, and that's really a high percentage of the population, and consume caffeine daily, I think it would really be worth experimenting to see if the caffeine is having some effect on your sleep.
Yeah, and of course that's difficult, and that gets us into this conversation about addiction. And I want to ask you about this word, because you use it in this book, and you call a spade. We're talking about a drug. It's caffeine. We're talking about addiction. But I feel like we need another word here, because, you know, I'm okay, I'm addicted to coffee, but it's not like being addicted to a drug where it's going to take me deeper and deeper and deeper, and I'm going to bankrupt my family and end up doing horrible things and, you know, God knows what, right? I mean, maybe we need another word.
Yeah, well, you really put your finger right on a really important point. You're not the first person to suggest that this really should belong in a whole different category than other drugs of abuse. But it does have the hallmarks of addiction, which is to say, you know, we develop tolerance. Most of us, even moderate caffeine use, we experience withdrawal symptoms upon cessation. And then there's, of course, a small portion of the population who would like to quit or moderate their caffeine use, who find themselves unable to. So, it's the issue of addiction. It's a tough word for this substance.
No, but it's fair. And when you say try to, I mean, I've had on and off in my adult life some issues with sleep, and I've tried to moderate my coffee intake, and I've felt that headache on sort of the top of my head. So I know it's real. I know there's a real physical side to this addiction. So what about that? Do we understand why that happens?
Why we experience these symptoms when we stop?
Yeah.
I mean, the headache specifically probably results from caffeine is a vasoconstrictor. So it's actually constricting those blood vessels in your head, in your brain. And as your caffeine levels are dropping after you've stopped, they're probably expanding and giving you a slight throbbing headache just where you gestured, on the outside of your head.
Yeah.
Which this is a very characteristic headache for people who are going through caffeine withdrawal.
Yeah. My advice is just don't try and drink the coffee. But I'm not a doctor, so take that with a grain of salt. I want to ask you about caffeine as a performance enhancement drug, and this gets really interesting, because everything we read about with professional athletes getting into terrible situations, we take this very seriously as a society, and yet drinking coffee does enhance physical performance, right?
It does. And so I went to the Ironman triathlon in Kona, Hawaii, and followed an athlete as she raced, a professional, Sarah Piampiano. And she's one of these people who is using caffeine in very methodically in gels, and so she can ingest caffeine throughout the race. Yeah, caffeine at the same levels that you or I, moderate coffee drinkers, might use, is a very effective performance-enhancing drug. And for an hour-long race, it might give us an advantage of 1% to 3% over a non-caffeinated state. And this is exactly why it's so hard to regulate, because how could you regulate a substance that most of us are taking every day in the quantities that enhance our performance?
Yeah, really interesting. Murray, let me bring in another voice. Scott Kilgore is joining us by phone from Cambridge. He's associate professor of psychology at Harvard Med School and director of the Social Cognitive and Effective Neuroscience Lab at McLean Hospital's Department of Psychiatry. And he conducted studies in the Army comparing different kinds of stimulants, including caffeine, during prolonged sleep deprivation. And Scott Kilgore, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
I'd really like to ask you, because I was so intrigued, what you found with these experiments on military folks on how caffeine affected their performance and their ability to perform effectively.
Yeah, well, we were interested in caffeine for obvious reasons, because as you can imagine, you know, soldiers really have to sort of go beyond the call of duty a lot of times and really get out there for, you know, days at a time and don't get a lot of sleep. So we wanted to know, how effective is this stuff at actually sustaining performance for people? So we've been conducting studies when I was on active duty in the Army, where we would keep people in the laboratory for several days at a time, and they wouldn't get any sleep. They'd volunteer for the study, and we would then monitor their performance. And we found that caffeine is an outstanding stimulant as far as keeping people awake, at least for the first and sometimes even the second night, without any sleep. And we also compared it to other types of stimulants.
All right. So it's good at keeping them awake, but how do they perform while they're awake?
Well, we found that it brought them back up to pretty close to 100% of their baseline reaction time. Hmm. That was our primary measure that we were looking at, is a very simple reaction time measure. You know, you're looking at a target on a screen, and you punch a button every time it shows up. And we find that it brings people right back up to their baseline and sustains them that way through most of the night.
Interesting. So no, are there any warnings that sort of come along, or any, did you conclude any warnings that should come along with using coffee and caffeine to keep yourself awake to do something?
Yeah, well, one of the limitations we found in our research was that it's great for sustaining basic reaction time performance, but it doesn't seem to bring all abilities up equally. And if we take a stimulant, we assume that it's going to, you know, bring us back up to a normal baseline for everything, and it doesn't. It doesn't improve your judgment and decision-making capabilities. So your ability to appreciate the long-term consequences of behavior, your willingness to engage in risky behaviors, things like that don't seem to be restored. And so I used to give the example to my soldiers sometimes that, you know, taking caffeine may wake you up and you can, you know, point your rifle in the right direction and you're right on target. The problem is you may not be shooting the right target because your judgment and decision-making are not necessarily restored to the same level as your response time.
Oh, boy. Really interesting. Well, Scott Kilgore, thanks so much for this little check into the world of research on caffeine and coffee. Really very grateful to you for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
That's Scott Kilgore, associate professor of psychology at Harvard Med School. Murray Carpenter, is that consistent with what your research found? I mean, what I heard there was, yeah, it'll keep you awake. It'll raise a lot of your sort of baseline abilities up to a pretty acceptable level, but maybe not all of them.
Yeah, I mean that does. And I did interview Scott for the book, and he's done some tremendous research. And yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. But again, it's worth recognizing that without caffeine, the soldiers would be operating at a subpar level anyway. And it's worth noting, a lot of the very best caffeine research has come out of the military because of the exact things that, mm-hmm. that he mentions, that soldiers are often operating, you know, with little sleep in critical moments when vigilance, and this is one of the things that caffeine can help with, when vigilance, you know, the ability to detect a stimuli can be so important.
Let's take a couple of calls. Listeners, we're talking to Murray Carpenter about his book, Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. We're asking you about your daily caffeine habit, whether you have questions, whether you tried to break yourself of that habit. Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Anthony and Murray, I drink about 4 8-ounce cups a day, and I drink it for stimulating my thinking. I also find that as a person who suffers from moderate, sometimes even more than moderate depression, I find it very effective in helping with that. And a few years ago, maybe 10 now, I gave it up for 2 or 3 years, and I just found no benefit whatsoever to giving it up.
All right, Steve, thank you so much for the call. Murray, what do you think? No benefit at all?
Well, you know, he mentions a couple of interesting things there. There seems to be an inverse association between caffeinated coffee drinking and depression, but it's really hard to say if people who are drinking coffee are less depressed or if people who are less depressed choose to drink coffee. But it's an interesting thing that he brings up. But in terms of the quitting and just not wanting to be that way, a couple of people expressed to me very much the same sort of sentiment, and one phrased it this way. She said she had quit for a couple of years, and she said, I just didn't want to live that way.
We should mention, by the way, I mean, I guess this is obvious, but I read it in your book and just sort of confirmed this idea that coffee is still our sort of caffeine delivery vehicle of choice, right?
That's the way
most of us get our
caffeine.
Right.
About 2/3 of our caffeine still comes from coffee, and so there's been a lot of growth in soft drinks and energy drinks and even in bottled teas. But coffee remains far and away our primary source of caffeine in the diet.
And yet you point out we're not drinking as much coffee as we used to, which sort of surprised me because I think of American cities as full of sort of more and more fancy coffee houses and espresso taps and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that really stunned me, too. Everyone in the industry understands this well in the coffee industry. But, yeah, our grandparents drank about twice as much coffee as we do. Coffee consumption peaked shortly after World War II in this country and declined pretty steadily. But about what you're mentioning in terms of the specialty coffee boom has really helped coffee to regain some of that market share, maybe about 20%. So we're getting back up there. But yes, we're still way below the levels that people consumed coffee 50 years ago.
And speaking of that specialty coffee market, what do we need to know about that? I mean, for the person who sort of tanks up at Starbucks every morning or during the day, what do we need to know about what goes on there and what we're putting in our bodies?
Well, it's a couple of things. For one thing, Starbucks, you know, a lot of people get a Starbucks Grande, you know, 16 ounces. That can pack a lot of caffeine. So we may not be drinking as much caffeine as a society as we used to, but we are getting some pretty big, strong servings. So, one 16-ounce cup of Starbucks can have a lot of caffeine, and it varies so widely that it's really hard to know from day to day how much caffeine you're getting in your coffee. So,
now, why would it vary? Isn't a Starbucks Grande a Starbucks Grande Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
That's the exact question that Bruce Goldberger asked. He's a researcher who's now in Florida, and he went into Starbucks, and he got the same 16-ounce Starbucks every day for six consecutive days. And one day it had as little as 260 milligrams of caffeine. Another day it had 560 milligrams, as much as seven Red Bulls.
As much as seven Red Bulls.
One cup of coffee. And the reason for this, so he was minimizing the variables there. He was getting the same coffee from the same place, presumably prepared the same way. Coffee is a natural product, and there just is going to be some natural variability in the caffeine levels in the bean.
Is that all it is too, or is it in the brewing? Is it the way it's ground, or all of that?
All of that. Of the above. But even if you try to minimize the variables, and say you have espresso, a researcher in Scotland found the same thing. Went into all these coffee shops, found an espresso with as little as 50 milligrams, another with 300 milligrams of caffeine. So, yeah, a lot of variability.
Scott, Murray, stand by. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Canton. We'll see if we can fit a call in before the break ends. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Excuse me. The interesting thing is that as a child, if you're not brought up with coffee on the table, in the same way my parents never had salt on the table, you really don't have the habit developing at a young age. And if you have some sort of self-control, or at least don't expose yourself the way people usually do at a younger age, it's not such a big issue. In other words, my wife's parents don't drink coffee, and that's because they have it once in a while to be polite. But in the morning, they don't have coffee because they never had it as a kid. The parents rather never drank it as a child, I think this has a lot to do with it, as far as people, you know. I mean, you have media and you have repetition, of course, but I think a lot has to do with the way you're brought up and what's exposed at a younger age.
Joe, thanks so much for putting that idea on the table. Murray, I want to ask you, I mean, Joe's call sort of raises this question. How did we first start consuming caffeine to begin with?
That's a great question. People figured out pretty much everywhere that caffeine exists naturally, people figured out how to use it. In Mesoamerica 3,000 years ago, people were using chocolate. Northern Africa, people started chewing coffee beans years ago. Again, probably around 3,000 years ago in Asia, people figured out if you brew tea leaves in water, you get a stimulating effect. Mm. So it seems to be one of these ideas that was just good enough that people would figure it out.
Yeah. Now, we're almost out of time, but your book is so packed full of fascinating details, and I was really fascinated by this. We know that caffeine is a naturally occurring drug, but you say that a lot of caffeine that's in our foods is synthetically produced now, right?
That's right.
By the Chinese.
That's right, yeah. Most of the caffeine industry in the U.S., we use we import 15 million pounds of caffeine in the U.S. every year, and most of that is produced in pharmaceutical plants, and much of that is produced. China's our biggest single source of caffeine, and again, it's mostly synthetic. You can also, and some of our caffeine does come from extraction from coffee or tea.
Yeah, well, really interesting. Well, it's a fascinating book, Murray. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about it.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Yeah, it really has been. Murray Carpenter is the author of Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. You can hear him talk about his book at Trident Booksellers and Cafe next Monday at 7 o'clock. There's more information at radioboston.org. And stay with us. There's more of the show after the break. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
One chemical substance gets out the lead.
Like she said, if I can't take my coffee break,